Book 2. The Book of the Dead. 2 weeks went past. Ritual and ceremony in their due times kept the world under the sky and the stars in their courses. It was astonishing what ritual and ceremony could do. The new king examined himself in the mirror and frowned. "What's it made of?" he said. "It's rather foggy." "Bronze, sire. Polished bronze," said Dios, handing him the flail of mercy. "In Ankh-Morpork we had glass mirrors with silver on the back. They were very good." "Yes, sire. Here we have bronze, sire." "Do I really have to wear this gold mask?" "The face of the sun, sire, handed down through all the ages. Yes, sire, on all public occasions, sire."
Tepic peered out through the eye slots. It was certainly a handsome face. It smiled faintly. He remembered his father visiting the nursery one day and forgetting to take it off. Tepic had screamed the place down.
"It's rather heavy."
"It is weighed with the centuries," said Dios, and passed over the obsidian reaping hook of justice.
"Have you been a priest long, Dios?"
"Many years, sire, man and eunuch. Now, father said you were high priest even in Grandad's time. You must be very old."
"Well preserved, sir. The gods have been kind to me," said Dios in the face of the evidence. "And now, sire, if we could just hold this as well..."
"What is it?"
"The honeycomb of increase, sire. Very important."
Tepic juggled it into position. "I expect you've seen a lot of changes," he said politely. A look of pain passed over the old priest's face, but quickly, as if it was in a hurry to get away.
"No, sire," he said smoothly. "I have been very fortunate."
"Oh, what's this?"
"The sheaf of plenty, sire. Extremely significant, very symbolic."
"If you could just tuck it under my arm, then. Have you ever heard of plumbing, Dios?"
The priest snapped his fingers at one of the attendants.
"No, sire," he said, and leaned forward. "This is the asp of wisdom. I'll just tuck it in here, shall I?"
"It's like buckets, but not as, smelly."
"Sounds dreadful, sire. The smell keeps bad influences away, I have always understood. This, sire, is the gourd of the waters of the heavens. If we could just raise our chin..."
"This is all necessary, is it?" said Tepic indistinctly.
"It is traditional, sire. If we could just rearrange things a little, sire, here is the three-pronged spear of the waters of the earth. I think we will be able to get this finger round it. We shall have to see about our marriage, sire."
"I'm not sure we would be compatible, Dios."
The high priest smiled with his mouth.
"Sire is pleased to jest, sire," he said urbanely. "However, it is essential that you marry."
"I am afraid all the girls I know are in Ankh-Morpork," said Tepic airily, knowing in his heart that this broad statement referred to Mrs. Collar, who had been his bedder in the sixth form, and one of the serving wenches who'd taken a shine to him and always gave him extra gravy.
But, and his blood pounded at the memory, there had been the annual Assassin's Ball, and because the young assassins were trained to move freely in society and were expected to dance well, and because well-cut black silk and long legs attracted a certain type of older woman, they'd whirled the night away through bourbons, galliards, and slow-stepping pavanines until the air thickened with musk and hunger. Chidder, whose simple open face and easy-going manner were a winner every time, came back late for days afterwards, and tended to fall asleep during lessons.
"Quite unsuitable, sire. We would require a consort well-versed in the observances." "Of course, our aunt is available, sire."
There was a clatter. Dios sighed and motioned the attendants to pick things up.
"If we could just begin again, sire. This is the cabbage of vegetative increase."
"Sorry," said Tepic. "I didn't hear you say I should marry my aunt, did I?"
"You did, sire. Interfamilial marriage is a proud tradition of our lineage," said Dios.
"But my aunt is my aunt."
Dios rolled his eyes. He'd advised the late king repeatedly about the education of his son, but the man was stubborn, stubborn. Now he'd have to do it on the fly. The gods were testing him, he decided. It took decades to make a monarch, and he had weeks to do it in.
"Yes, sire," he said patiently. "Of course, and she is also your uncle, your cousin, and your father."
Hold on. My father?"
The priest raised his hand soothingly.
"A technicality," he said. "Your great-great-grandmother once declared she is king as a matter of political expediency, and I don't believe the edict is ever rescinded."
"But she was a woman, though."
Dios looked shocked.
"Oh, no, sire. She is a man. She herself declared this."
"But look, a chap's aunt..."
"Quite so, sire. I quite understand."
"Well, thank you," said Tepic.
"It is a great shame that we have no sisters."
"Sisters?
It does not do to water the divine blood, sire. The son might not like it. Now this, sire, is the scapula of hygiene. Where would you like it put?"
King Tepikaimon the 27th was watching himself being stuffed. It was just as well he didn't feel hunger these days. Certainly he would never want to eat chicken again.
"Very nice stitching there, master."
"Just keep your finger still, Gurn."
"My mother does stitching like that. She's got a penny with stitching like that, as our mum,"
said Gurn, conversationally.
"Keep it still," I said.
"It's got all ducks and hens on it,"
Gurn supplied helpfully. Dill concentrated on the job in hand. It was good workmanship, he was prepared to admit. The Guild of Embalmers and Allied Trades had awarded him medals for it.
"It must make you feel really proud," said Gurn.
"What?"
"Well, our mam says the king goes on living sort of thing, after all this stuffing and stitching, sort of in the netherworld, with your stitching in him."
"And several sacks of straw and a couple of buckets of pitch," thought the shade of the king sadly. "And the wrapping off Gurn's lunch," although he didn't blame the lad, who'd just forgotten where he put it. All eternity with someone's lunch wrapping as part of your vital organs. There had been half a sausage left, too. He'd become quite attached to Dill, and even to Gurn. He seemed still to be attached to his body, too. At least he felt uncomfortable if he wandered more than a few hundred yards away from it. And so in the course of the last couple of days, he'd learned quite a lot about them. Funny, really, he'd spent the whole of his life in the kingdom talking to a few priests and so forth. He knew objectively there had been other people around, servants and gardeners and so forth, but they figured in his life as blobs. He was at the top, and then his family, and then the priests, and the nobles, of course, and then there were the blobs. Damn fine blobs, of course, some of the finest blobs in the world, as loyal as a collection of blobs as a king might hope to rule, but blobs, nonetheless. Now he was absolutely engrossed in the daily details of Dill's shy hopes for advancement within the guild, and the unfolding story of Gurn's clumsy overtures to Gluenda, the garlic farmer's daughter who lived nearby. He listened in fascinated astonishment to the elaboration of a world as full of subtle distinctions of grade and station as the one he had so recently left. It was terrible to think that he might never know if Gurn overcame her father's objections and won his intended, or if Dill's work on this job, on him, would allow him to aspire to the rank of exalted grand 90-degree variants of the Natron Lodge of the Guild of Embalmers and Allied Trades. It was as if death was some astonishing optical device which turned even a drop of water into a complex hive of life. He found an overpowering urge to counsel Dill on elementary politics, or apprise Gurn of the benefit of washing and looking respectable. He tried it several times. They could sense him, there was no doubt about that, but they just put it down to drafts. Now he watched Dill pad over to the big table of bandages and come back with a thick swatch, which he held reflectively against what even the king was now prepared to think of as his corpse.
"I think the linen," he said at last. "It's definitely his colour."
Gurn put his head on one side.
"It looked good in the Hessian," he said. "Or maybe the calico."
"Not the calico. Definitely not the calico.
On him it's too big. He could mould her into it, with wear, you know.
Dill snorted.
Wear? Wear? You shouldn't talk to me about calico and wear. What happens if someone rubs the tomb in 1,000 years' time and him in calico, I'd like to know? He'd lurch halfway down the corridor, maybe throttle one of them, I grant you, but then he's coming undone, right? The elbows would be out in no time. I'd never live it down.
But you'll be dead, master.
Dead? What's that got to do with it?
Dill riffled through the samples.
No, it'll be the Essien. Got plenty of giving it, Essien. Good traction, too. He'll really be able to lurch up speed in the passages if ever he needs to.
The king sighed. He'd have preferred something lightweight in taffeta.
And go and shut the door, Dill added. It's getting breezy in here.
And now it's time, said the high priest, for us to see our late father.
He allowed himself a quiet smile.
I am sure he is looking forward to it, he added.
Tepic considered this. It wasn't something he was looking forward to, but at least it would get everyone's mind off him marrying relatives. He reached down in what he hoped was a kingly fashion to stroke one of the palace cats. This also was not a good move. The creature sniffed it, went cross-eyed with the effort of thought, and then bit his fingers.
Cats are sacred, said Dios, shocked at the words Tepic uttered.
Long-legged cats with silver fur and disdainful expressions are, maybe, said Tepic, nursing his hands. I don't know about this sort. I'm sure sacred cats don't leave dead ibises under the bed, and I'm certain that sacred cats that live surrounded by endless sand don't come indoors and do it in the king's sandals, Dios.
All cats are cats, said Dios, vaguely, and added, if we would be so gracious as to follow us.
He motioned Tepic towards a distant arch. Tepic followed slowly. He'd been back home for what seemed like ages, and it still didn't feel right. The air was too dry, the clothes felt wrong, it was too hot. Even the buildings seemed wrong, the pillars for one thing. Back home, back at the guild, pillars were graceful fluted things with little bunches of stone grapes and things round the top. Here they were massive pear-shaped lumps where all the stone had run to the bottom. Half a dozen servants trailed behind him, carrying the various items of regalia. He tried to imitate Dios's walk, and found the movements coming back to him. You turned your torso this way, then you turned your head this way, and extended your arms at 45 degrees to your body with the palms down, and then you attempted to move. The high priest's staff raised echoes as it touched the flagstones. A blind man could have walked barefoot through the palace by tracing the time-worn dimples it had created over the years.
I am afraid that we will find that our father has changed somewhat since we last saw him, said Dios conversationally as they undulated by the fresco of Queen Kafut, accepting tribute from the kingdoms of the world.
Well, yes, said Tepic, bewildered by the tone. He's dead, isn't he?
There's that too, said Dios,
and Tepic realized that he hadn't been referring to something as trivial as the king's current physical condition. He was lost in a horrified admiration. It wasn't that Dios was particularly cruel or uncaring. It was simply that death was a mere irritating transition in the eternal business of existence. The fact that people died was just an inconvenience, like them being out when you called. It's a strange world, he thought. It's all busy shadows, and it never changes. And I'm part of it. Who's he? He said, pointing to a particularly big fresco showing a tall man with a hat like a chimney and a beard like a rope riding a chariot over a lot of other much smaller people.
His name is in the cartouche below, said Dios primly.
What?
The small oval, sire, said Dios.
Tepic peered closely at the dense hieroglyphics.
Thin eagle, eye, wiggly line, man with stick, bird sitting down, wiggly line, he read.
Dios winced.
I believe we must apply ourselves more to the study of modern languages, he said, recovering a bit. His name is Ptah Ka Ba.
He is king when the Dajjal Empire extends from the Circle Sea to the Rim Ocean, when almost half the continent pays tribute to us. Tepic realized what it was about the man's speech that was strange. Dios would bend any sentence to breaking point if it meant avoiding a past tense. He pointed to another fresco. "And her?" he said. "She is Queen Khat Leon Raptah," said Dios. "She wins the kingdom of Hawandaland by stealth. This is the time of the Second Empire." "But she is dead," said Tepic. "I understand so," said the High Priest, after the slightest of pauses. "Yes, the past tense definitely bothered Dios." "I have learned 7 languages," said Tepic, secure in the knowledge that the actual marks he had achieved in 3 of them would remain concealed in the ledgers of the guild. "Indeed, sire." "Oh, yes. Morporkian, Vangelmesht, Ifib, Laotian, and several others," said Tepic. "Ah." Dios nodded, smiled, and continued to proceed down the corridor, limping slightly but still measuring his pace like the ticking of centuries. "The barbarian lands." Tepic looked at his father. The embalmers had done a good job. They were waiting for him to tell them so. Part of him, which still lived in Ankh-Morpork, said, "This is a dead body, wrapped up in bandages. Surely they can't think that this will help him get better. In Ankh, you die, and they bury you or burn you or throw you to the ravens. Here, it just means you slow down a bit and get given all the best food. It's ridiculous. How can you run a kingdom like this? They seem to think that being dead is like being deaf. You just have to speak up a bit." But a second, older voice said, "We've run a kingdom like this for 7,000 years. The humblest melon farmer has a lineage that makes kings elsewhere look like mayflies. We used to own the continent before we sold it again to pay for pyramids. We don't even think about other countries less than 3,000 years old. It all seems to work." "Hello, father," he said. The shade of Tepic Kaimon the 27th, which had been watching him closely, hurried across the room.
"You're looking well," he said. "Good to see you. Look, this is urgent. Please pay attention. It's about death."
"He says he is pleased to see you," said Dios.
"You can hear him," said Tepic.
"I didn't hear anything. The dead naturally speak through the priests," said the priest. "That is the custom, sire."
"But he can hear me, can he?"
"Of course."
"I've been thinking about this whole pyramid business, and look, I'm not certain about it."
Tepic leaned closer.
"Auntie sends her love,"
he said loudly. He thought about this.
"That's my aunt, not yours."
"I hope," he added.
I say, can you hear me?"
"He bids you greetings from the world beyond the veil," said Dios.
"Well, yes, I suppose I do, but look, I don't want you to go to a lot of trouble and build a..."
"We are going to build you a marvelous pyramid, father. You'll really like it there. There'll be people to look after you and everything." Tepic glanced at Dios for reassurance.
"He'll like that, won't he?" "I don't want one!" screamed the king. "There's a whole interesting eternity I haven't seen yet. I forbid you to put me in a pyramid!"
"He says that is very proper, and you are a dutiful son," said Dios.
"Can you see me? How many fingers am I holding up? Think it's fun, do you, spending the rest of your death under 1,000,000 tons of rock watching yourself crumble to bits? Is that your idea of a good epoch?"
"It's rather drafty in here, sire," said Dios. "Perhaps we should get on."
"Anyway, you can't possibly afford it."
"And we'll put your favorite frescoes and statues in with you. You'll like that, won't you?" said Tepic desperately. "All your bits and pieces around you. He will like it, won't he?" he asked Dios as they walked back to the throne room. "Only, I don't know, I somehow got a feeling..."
He isn't too happy about it.
I assure you, sire, said Dios, he can have no other desire.
Back in the embalming room, King Tepikaimon the 27th tried to tap Gurn on the shoulder, which had no effect. He gave up and sat down beside himself.
Don't do it, lad, he said bitterly. Never have descendants.
And then there was the Great Pyramid itself. Tepik's footsteps echoed on the marble tiles as he walked around the model. He wasn't sure what one was supposed to do here, but kings, he suspected, were often put in that position. There was always the good old fallback, which was known as taking an interest.
Well, he said, how long have you been designing pyramids?
Pitaclusp, architect and jobbing pyramid builder to the nobility, bowed deeply.
All my life, O light of noonday.
It must be fascinating, said Tepik.
Pitaclusp looked sidelong at the high priest, who nodded.
It has its points, O fount of waters, he ventured.
He wasn't used to kings talking to him as though he was a human being. He felt obscurely that it wasn't right. Tepik waved a hand at the model on its podium.
Yes, he said uncertainly. Well, good. Four walls, and a pointy top. Jolly good. First class. Says it all, really.
There still seemed to be too much silence around. He plunged on.
Good show, he said. I mean, there's no doubt about it. This is a pyramid. And what a pyramid it is, indeed.
This still didn't seem enough. He sought for something else.
People will look at it in centuries to come and they'll say... that is a pyramid.
He coughed.
The walls slope nicely, he croaked.
But, he said, two pairs of eyes swiveled towards his. He said.
Dios raised an eyebrow. Sire, I seem to remember once my father said that, you know, when he died, he'd quite like to, be buried at sea.
There wasn't the choke of outrage he had expected.
He meant the delta. It's very soft ground by the delta, said Pataclusp. It'd take months to get decent footings in. Then there's your risk of sinking. And the damp, it's not good damp, inside a pyramid.
No, said Tepik, sweating under Dios's gaze. I think what he meant was, you know, in the sea.
Pataclusp's brow furrowed.
Ooh, tricky that, he said thoughtfully. Interesting idea. I suppose one could build a small one, a million tonner, and float it out on pontoons or something.
No, said Tepik, trying not to laugh. I think what he meant was buried without...
Tepikaimon the 27th means that he would want to be buried without delay, said Dios, his voice like greased silk. And there is no doubt that he would require to honour the very best you can build, architect.
No, I'm sure you've got it wrong, said Tepik.
Dios's face froze. Pataclusps slid into the waxen expression of someone with whom it is suddenly nothing to do. He started to stare at the floor as if his very survival depended on his memorising it in extreme detail.
Wrong, said Dios.
No offence, I'm sure you mean well, said Tepik. It's just that, well, he seemed very clear about it at the time, and...
I mean, well,
said Dios, tasting each word as though it was a sour grape. Pataclusp coughed. He had finished with the floor. Now he started on the ceiling. Dios took a deep breath.
Sire, he said, we have always been pyramid builders. All our kings are buried in pyramids. It is how we do things, sire. It is how things are done.
Yes, but it does not admit of dispute, said Dios. Who could wish for anything else, sealed with all artifice against the desecrations of time?
Now the oiled silk of his voice became armor, hard as steel, scornful as spears, shielded for all time against the insults of change.
Tepic glanced down at the high priest's knuckles. They were white, the bone pressing through the flesh as though in a rage to escape. His gaze slid up the grey-clad arm to Dios's face. Ye gods, he thought, it's really true. He does look like they got tired of waiting for him to die and pickled him anyway. Then his eyes met those of the priest, more or less with a clang. He felt as though his flesh was being very slowly blown off his bones. He felt that he was no more significant than a mayfly. A necessary mayfly, certainly, a mayfly who would be accorded all due respect, but still an insect with all the rights thereof, and as much free will in the fury of that gaze as a scrap of papyrus in a hurricane.
The king's will is that he be interred in a pyramid, said Dios, in the tone of voice the creator must have used to sketch out the moon and stars.
Said Tepic.
The finest of pyramids for the king, said Dios.
Tepic gave up.
Oh, he said.
Good, fine, yes. The very best, of course.
Pataclusp beamed with relief, produced his wax tablet with a flourish, and took a stylus from the recesses of his wig. The important thing, he knew, was to clinch the deal as soon as possible. Let things slip in a situation like this, and a man could find himself with 1,500,000 tons of bespoke limestone on his hands.
Then that will be the standard model, shall we say, O water in the desert?
Tepic looked at Dios, who was standing and glaring at nothing now, staring the bulldogs of entropy into submission by willpower alone.
I think something larger, he ventured hopelessly.
That's the executive, said Pataclusp. Very exclusive, O base of the Eternal Column. Last you a perpetuality. Also our special offer this eon is various measurements of paracosmic significance built into the very fabric at no extra cost.
He gave Tepic an expectant look.
Yes, yes, that will be fine, said Tepic.
Dios took a deep breath.
The king requires far more than that, he said.
I do, said Tepic doubtfully.
Indeed, sire, it is your express wish that the greatest of monuments is erected for your father, said Dios smoothly.
This was a contest, Tepic knew, and he didn't know the rules or how to play, and he was going to lose.
It is? Oh, yes. Yes, I suppose it is, really. Yes.
A pyramid unequalled along the Djel, said Dios. That is the command of the king. It is only right and proper.
Yes, yes, something like that. Twice the normal size, said Tepic desperately, and had the brief satisfaction of seeing Dios look momentarily disconcerted.
Sire, he said.
It is only right and proper, said Tepic.
Dios opened his mouth to protest, and saw Tepic's expression, and shut it again. Pataclusp scribbled busily, his Adam's apple bobbing. Something like this only happened once in a business career.
"Can do you a very nice black marble facing on the outside," he said, without looking up. "We may have just enough in the quarry, O King of the Celestial Orbs," he added hurriedly.
"Very good," said Tepic.
Pataclusp picked up a fresh tablet.
"Shall we say the capstone picked out in Electrum? It's cheaper to have it built in right from the start. You don't want to use just silver and then say later, I wish I'd had it.
Electrum, yes.
And the usual offices?
What?
The burial chamber, that is, and the outer chamber. I'd recommend the Memphis. Very select. That comes with a matching extra-large treasure room. So handy for all those little things one cannot bear to leave behind.
Pataclusp turned the tablet over and started on the other side.
And, of course, a similar suite for the Queen, I take it. O King, who shall live forever.
Eh?
Oh, yes, yes, I suppose so, said Tepic, glancing at Dios. Everything, you know. Then there's the mazes, said Pataclusp, trying to keep his voice steady. Very popular this era. Very important, your maze. It's no good deciding you ought to have put a maze in after the robbers have been. Maybe I'm old-fashioned, but I'd go for the labyrinth every time. Like we say, they may get in all right, but they'll never get out.
It costs that little bit extra, but what's money at a time like this? Oh, master of the waters. Something we don't have, said a warning voice in the back of Tepic's head. He ignored it. He was in the grip of destiny. Yes, he said, straightening up. The Labrys. Two of them. Pataclusp's stylus went through his tablet. His and hers. Oh, stone of stones, he croaked. Very handy, very convenient. With selection of traps from stock, we can offer deadfalls, pitfalls, sliders, rolling balls, dropping spears, arrows. Yes, said Tepic. We'll have them. We'll have them all. All of them.